Revels December 6th to the 15th at the Scottish Rite Center in downtown Portland. More information about the show can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look. I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. Our topic today is the new housing bubble and Wall Street's growing rental empire. My guest is Laura Gottesdiener. She's a journalist who has written for Rolling Stone, Ms. Magazine, The Huffington Post, and many others. She's the editor of Waging Nonviolence, and she's also the author of a book titled A Dream Foreclosed, Black America and the Fight for a Place to Call Home. It was published in August by Zuccotti Press, and it's won praise from people like Naomi Klein, Alice Walker, Ralph Nader, and Noam Chomsky. Quite a list of support. She's also the author of a November 26th article on Times Dispatch titled How Wall Street Has Turned Housing Into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again. So welcome to KBOO, Laura Gottesdiener.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for joining us. So let's start with this housing recovery we've been seeing. I, as a person who am a renter, have been watching the housing prices beginning to come up again here in Portland, Oregon, not as fast as in other places, but definitely a sign. I thought it might be a good sign, but it confused me because all other signs say that the average American is making less income, suffering more. So talk about this new recovery.
Sure. So a lot of the increases in housing values are being driven by essentially Wall Street, by these institutional investors, people from hedge funds, people from private equity firms, who are going into cities across the country and buying an incredible number of foreclosed houses at dirt cheap prices and amassing what essentially amounts to these unprecedented rental empires. It's the first time in U.S. history that we've ever had, you know, the finance guys, the Wall Street tycoons of the world, owning tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of single-family homes across the country and then renting them out to us. So it's really something that we've never experienced before. And, you know, this isn't to say that there aren't some individual families going and buying their own home for the first time, and that's not leading to an increase in housing prices. But overall, when we really talk about this pretty spectacular rebound of the housing market, it's because big Wall Street money is flooding in and snapping up these homes real cheap. And that's the part of the narrative that's been completely hidden from ordinary Americans.
Well, most of the homes are inexpensive homes, relatively $100,000 to $150,000 kinds of homes, and they don't have to go to a different bank to get credit to buy this, like a new homeowner might be, or someone who's lost a home in the past.
Exactly. So that's why it's really quite obviously a land grab, because, you know, these players, these hedge funds, these private equity firms, are essentially the cousins of the big banks that crashed our economy and the housing market to begin with. And 10 million of us, ordinary Americans, were evicted from homes across the country. Tens of millions more lost an incredible amount of equity in their homes. You know, communities, the African American community, for example, lost 50% of its median wealth. So ordinary Americans are not going to auctions and dropping $100,000, $150,000 in cash. But you know who can afford to do that? It's Wall Street. So what we're seeing is that they have the capital right now to go in and execute this incredible land grab. And it's something that I'm really surprised that the government hasn't stepped in and done something about it.
Well, given our government's atmosphere towards business, I'm not surprised a bit. But yes, it's the kind of thing in the past we might have expected some action to be taken. You know, the housing bubble that crashed in 2008, appraisers were sort of being shoved out of it. Appraisers were the people in the real estate market who were supposed to try to determine the actual value of any particular house. And during that bubble, they were being asked to, you know, basically just go for the price the broker told them. Don't really assess the value of the home. I know this because I was working in appraisal at the time, and it was very frustrating to the appraisers because this is where they got their work. And if they refused to meet their price, they were in trouble. If they went with it, they were basically being false and saying and lying legally. So this time around, I recently talked to an appraiser and they said, oh no, appraisers are even getting less work. They're getting paid for it less and they're supposed to do these quicker drive-bys. And I knew at that moment that there was something still fundamentally wrong with the housing market, because when those who are lending money to buy houses don't care if that house has leaks in the basement or not, then you know they're not, you know, it's a false value, and that's where you get into deep trouble. So they're buying up all of these homes and they're renting them. Let's talk about who the actual players are on Wall Street and then the big firms that are buying them up. And I know there was a ton of research that went behind your article to get the information about who's buying up these homes and who's renting them out. So if you could talk about who the players are in the investment side and in the actual getting the homes and renting them.
Sure. So, you know, the biggest player in this game, and there's a number, but the biggest one is the Blackstone Group. It's a staggeringly large private equity firm, and it's known as an alternative asset manager. Manages about $200 billion in assets all around the world. They have spent probably by now about $8 billion. When the article came out, it was $7.5 billion. Dollars to buy up around 40,000 homes across the country. And I know that was a lot of numbers in one sentence, but what we're pretty much talking about is a company dropping almost $8 billion to buy up and amass the largest single-family rental empire that this country has ever seen.
And in some areas, they have a very large concentration of the rentals available.
Yeah, so I worked with a team of students, graduate students at Hunter, who were just amazing, and a professional mapper. And this team really mapped out where some of these properties were and what the concentration was, because it's very difficult to trace where these properties actually are. You know, Blackstone often boasts that its subsidiary, Invitation Homes, has this massive empire, but they don't tell us where these houses are. You know, I had to go through essentially, secret documents from the company that was sent to these investors to find out just how many houses were in various cities, for example, you know, just to find out that there were about 5,000 in Phoenix, that there were about 6,000 in Atlanta. You know, that could be publicly available information, but I had to, you know, essentially go through these leaked documents to get it. And the reason it's so complicated is because publicly it is required that these banks will, you know, transfer the deeds, and that does happen in the public domain, but what they are doing is buying up houses under a number of subsidiaries. So, for example, you know, the student that was mapping Phoenix ended up having to go through five or six or even seven, I think, subsidiary companies and check all of the county property deeds for and property records for all of those various subsidiaries just to start to get an estimate of where these houses were. And so it was... When the maps finally came out after so many hours upon hours of work, it was really just this jaw-drop moment, because what we saw was that there are neighborhoods where Blackstone owns not just one, but sometimes two or three houses on every single block. And, you know, when I saw that, I could just feel in my stomach, like, this is going to lead, in my mind, to price fixing, to collusion, to this company essentially having undue influence over the rental market in this city. And I think it's worth noting, just on Monday, the head of HUD, the Housing Urban Development, said we are in a rental crisis that this country has never seen before. We are facing a rental affordability crisis, again, unprecedented in the history of this company. At the very same time that Wall Street is getting into the rental market for the first time in history. So it's really obvious that these forces are working together and leading to an increasingly dangerous and unaffordable situation for tens of millions of Americans.
Well, let's talk about who is the money behind Blackstone. Can you talk about the arrangements with, you know, how?
Sure. So, you know, Blackstone enjoyed a $3.6 billion, again, billion with a B, dollar credit line from Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank has been one of the most aggressive foreclosers in this country, foreclosing on probably about a million homes. So, you know, that credit line arranged by Deutsche Bank has allowed Blackstone to go in and just drop cash everywhere it wants to go, at auctions, in bulk purchases from the banks, you know.
So, Laura, we could literally see someone whose home was foreclosed by Deutsche Bank ending up needing to even stay in their same general neighborhood, renting a home from Blackstone, one of Blackstone's subsidiaries. They could end up renting their own formerly foreclosed. Right.
Exactly.
And those rent. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, you can see, I have photos, for example, of the posters that the Blackstone Group, through its subsidiary Invitation Homes, will post on people's homes after they've bought these foreclosed homes from Deutsche Bank or J.P. Morgan or Fannie and Freddie. They're buying as well from Fannie and Freddie. And they'll post a sign that says, essentially, you know, you have so many days to get out or you can start renting from us. And oftentimes people will leave, especially because people are often harassed into leaving, and then they'll have to go find another place to rent, and it'll often be from that same company. You know, Blackstone also is a public company, and so it's institutional investors, essentially it's institutional owners, the people who make money when Blackstone makes money, are all the major banks that, you know, orchestrated this financial collapse and now have been foreclosing most aggressively on Americans. So Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, B of A, everybody has a stake in this company. So if Blackstone succeeds, all of Wall Street succeeds.
So it's a pretty big bet that's going on in this buying up of rentals. It's creating at least a temporary housing price bubble. And that is a problem, of course, because if houses get beyond their value and people are still buying them, that's when they get into trouble because they begin to lose money and it drops. But it seems to me that there are other kinds of problems that come out of this. One is that rental prices could be affected long term with this number of rentals being owned by one kind of property. You know, we'll see in a town, a city like Portland, different property owners will have their signs up over many, 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 many apartment buildings. I mean, that's something very common. But that's a little different than what we're talking about. So we're talking about the largest banks having a stake in keeping rents high.
Exactly. I mean, I think what we're really talking about is increased influence by Wall Street in housing. I don't want to just say the housing market, but the housing reality, the lived reality of ordinary Americans across the country. And when you sort of boil it down to, do we want Wall Street to be more involved in finding a place to live and finding a decent place to live, a dignified place to live, or do we want Wall Street to be less involved in that? It becomes quite clear, based on their legacy in the housing market, the worst financial and housing crisis that we've had since the Great Depression, it becomes quite clear, no, we don't want Wall Street more involved in our everyday lived realities. So for me, it's really a question of, are we going to learn our lesson from the 2007-2008 crash, which we're still living through? Are we going to learn our lesson and move towards a more sane, a more simple, and a more rights-based way of living in this country, one that recognizes that housing is a fundamental human right, a fundamental human need, that it's nearly impossible to exist in this society without having a place to stay? Or are we going to continue to define housing as a market in which investors with no stake in communities can make staggering short-term profit and essentially then just leave communities decimated when they want to take their money elsewhere?
That's right.
I think that it's quite obvious we need to consider that housing is a human right and then draft policy in a market that supports that idea.
And this is Linda Olson-Osterlund with A Deeper Look. I'm speaking with Laura Gotzendieter, the author of the of a new article titled How Wall Street Has Turned Housing Into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again. And the article does have, and I want to let people know, they can locate it on Tom's Dispatch. Or you can, you know, go to my go to the KABU website, and we'll link to it from there. But it does include maps that very clearly show you how heavy the concentration is in certain areas where they're buying this. Given how difficult it is to find out whether or not houses being bought up have been bought by a subsidiary, I think there's a big task ahead of journalists and others to be looking into this in the future. But and we're talking about, these are in rental areas where a large part of the people who lost so much wealth during the housing bubble, when we talk about, you know, groupings of people losing their wealth, we mean that people's equity in their homes is often their only form of wealth, and actually has for many, many years been held up as the main way for a young family to begin to build up wealth. And so I know that you found staggering statistics about African Americans. They've lost 53% of their wealth during this last bubble. And I believe Hispanics as much as 66%?
Six, yeah. Yeah, and that was all that was largely as a result of the market crash and people completely just losing the equity in their homes overnight. Some people lost, you know, half of their value within 6 months, a year.
So we're talking about an America that is a lot poorer, let's be honest. What are the statistics from 2009 to 2012? 1% of Americans captured 95% of the income gains. So the majority of us are worse off since that crisis. There hasn't been a substantial recovery for the majority of Americans in any way. I think the statistics show that. If people recall, we called them mortgage-backed securities was the creation of Wall Street that helped lead to the bubble and the crash. Talk about the new security that Blackstone announced at the end of November.
So at the end of November, Blackstone released a bond. It was much anticipated. The financial press had been watching this for months. It's called a rental-backed security. What does that mean? It means that Blackstone has, for the first time again in U.S. history, released a rated bond in which they've bundled the rental payments of just over 3,200 houses. So people are living in these houses. They pay their rent checks each month. The rent checks then go into this bundle, which is then used to pay back investors who have bought the bond, who have bought part of this bond. And what's the danger? The danger is that once again, we're seeing lots of people's payments be bundled, securitized, and then sold off to investors all around the world, not just country, but the world.
So, Laura, when a new security like this is formed, is there no regulation? I mean, can Wall Street or a financial entity come up with just any, do you see what I'm saying? I mean, any new way to make money and call it a security and sell pieces of it?
Pretty much, yes. The regulation always lags behind the development of new financial products. The way that many anticipated that this financial product would be not regulated, but at least checked a bit, was that very few people expected it to get a AAA rating. The rating agencies rate different financial products based on the amount that they're supposed to be safe, essentially safe investments. And everyone was saying, this is completely untested. We've never seen anything like this. Look at this exotic product. Well, it does look a lot like, mortgage-backed securities, which are the product that caused this crash in the first place. So, no, of course it can't be rated AAA. And so Blackstone sort of went back to the drawing board and said, okay, well, what if we take out mortgages on the underlying properties? They bought them in cash, and then they took out mortgages and used those mortgages to then actually sell the security with the mortgages on the underlying houses offered as collateral. What does that mean? It means that, let's say, Blackstone's first bond, which they released at the end of November, blows up. Well, investors will then have the right, if they're not getting paid back through the rental stream payments, they then have the right to actually foreclose and seize these homes using these mortgages as the underlying collateral. What would that mean? that would mean that thousands of people across the country would be evicted whether or not they ever missed a rental payment. And that, to me, I think, is the most frustrating and offensive in some ways part of this whole scheme, because once again what we're seeing is that people have less and less control over their daily lives, and that Wall Street is creating essentially a world with these incentives where we can't even do the right things and then receive our basic human rights. We're always at the precarious whims of Wall Street. So if Blackstone does a bad job with their security, I could be evicted. Doesn't matter whether or not I missed a rental payment.
Well, and Laura Gotzendiener, what if you're a renter and and the house has problems? I think you have some examples about that. And what happens when there isn't even just a local management company handling it, that the actual, you know, where it goes back to is so far and detached from you. Talk about some of the problems of people who are in some of these homes now. Besides what seems to me like an incredible... Actually, I'm going to ask you not to talk about the problems people are having right now, because I do want to talk about this, which is, it seems to me the setup for guaranteeing that rents will come in, I would expect to see ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange, be putting out some legislation to go around the states to kind of get a guarantee on evictions and rental agreements, because right now rental agreements are negotiated very differently state by state and even city by city, and there are local rules that, you know, are different about those kinds of things. You know, we don't have anything like the kind of rental, you know, the things that they have in New York, where they can, you know, they have different layers of maintaining rent at certain levels. But there are different rental rights and different rental agreements in different states. So I would expect that someone would be trying to put out some model legislation to assure that renters can be evicted with a, you know, with so much notice, and that I'm concerned that they actually will try to, you know, you can walk away from a rental now. If you lose your job and, you know, you are completely out of money, you can walk away from a rental. You may have a responsibility to pay that rent, and I feel responsible to pay mine, certainly, but you can walk away from it. What will happen in the future when these banks are their securities are dependent on keeping a steady stream of renter income at the same time that the economy is really going down for most people?
Yeah, I think that's the big risk. You know, what we're seeing is that they're going to have this scramble. Like, so essentially the reports that are coming out of these homes is that Blackstone so far has not proven to be a good property manager. And I think it's fair to say that Blackstone's not the only player in the game. There's American Homes for Rent, there's Colony, there's a number of other people doing the same thing, but none of them really are showing that they're going to be good landlords, good property managers. So what happens if they're not able to retain people in the houses, if they're not able to ensure these rental stream payments, essentially? Well, it's possible that these securities will fail. And, you know, I'm not...
And that will have these big bank investors failing again. Will they be too big to bail out? I mean...
You know, I mean, I'm neither a psychic nor an economist, so I don't want to say what's going to happen. What I want to say is that we did just experience very similar economic forces at play. We did just experience the rise of a very similar financial product. We did just experience what happens when Wall Street increasingly tries to make money off the back of our housing market. And all of those same trends, all of those same phenomenons are being repeated in this new scheme. That, to me, is what makes me nervous. So can I say for sure these securities will blow up? No, I don't want to try to predict what's going to happen. Can I say that they're very similar to the last staggering rise in the housing market and Wall Street's involvement in these securities that did blow up? Yeah, I can say that it's very similar.
One of the problems that has come out and is still ongoing out of the last crash was that many municipalities and government entities of that sort invested their pension funds and different funds in these mortgage-backed securities. Is that a possibility of something that could happen going forward with these rental-backed securities? And do all of those who are buying into them really know they're buying these securities?
that's a great question. You know, I've been trying to figure out who are the investors actually buying that first bond. That's information that I haven't been able to uncover yet. But it very much is a possibility, probably quite likely, that you'll start to see pension funds, municipalities investing in this type of thing. This is something that, you know, selling off these securities with the combination of also owning these properties and in having the accumulated wealth that these properties are going to accumulate once the values rise gives a very good return for Blackstone. But the securities itself don't give this incredibly high return. I think it's around 6%. So it's very much something that, you know, the riskiest hedge funds that need to get 12, 13% returns aren't going to invest actually in this bond. I actually, you know, spoke to a number of people at hedge funds that were like, yeah, we got the pitch, but it's not a high enough yield for us. We are not going to invest in this. So what we are going to see exactly is what you're saying is municipalities, pension funds, you know, universities being the ones to really buy up these securities.
If you were going to look at it and looking forward, we've only got a few more minutes left, what would you say is the biggest risk for the American public as a whole going forward with this new type of security? And if you had anything you could do to change what it looks like this going forward, what would you recommend people do?
Great question. I think the biggest risk is that we're going to continue to misunderstand what housing means and represents. I think we're going to misdefine it. We're going to continue to understand that it's a profit driver for the economy. But when we say the economy, we're really talking about a small number of investors. And we're not going to really understand and fully define housing as something that is a basic human right that every American deserves, that every human being deserves, just by virtue of being born, just in order to become the best human being that person can be. And if we don't redefine housing in this country, it is going to have the largest ripple effect in every single sector of American society in terms of disregarding people's basic human rights, not ensuring that America is a safe and dignified place in which to live. And so we're going to continue to see, for example, wages stagnating. We're going to continue to see, you know, racial segregation increase rather than decrease. All of these things are based on housing and where people live in the communities and the vibrancy of communities. And so if we can't very quickly, I think, take a U-turn on the way that we're recovering, quote-unquote recovering from the housing crisis, we are not going to see this country move towards a rights-based, a sane and a humane understanding of housing. And as a result, we're going to really see increased economic and social instability for decades to come.
Well, I know that the rental market in Portland has really gone sky high, and it's forcing people of even moderate income out of the center of the city. So it's an issue we'll all be watching. I would suggest everyone keep an eye on their state legislatures, look for any new laws being proposed around renters and landlords. Thank you so much for joining me, Laura Gotz-Diener. I want to once again say the name of your book because it looks like a really great book, and I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me. There it is, A Dream Foreclosed. Please look for that book and look for her article on Tom's Dispatch. Very good reading. Thanks for joining us here at KBOO.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for listening to KBOO and A Deeper Look. We're going to go on to Air Cascadia. I want to thank my engineer, Rock, today.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. It is a minute now before 10 o'clock. And coming up in a half hour, actually coming up in 15 minutes, it'll be Flashpoints, today featuring excerpts from the annual Indigenous Peoples Sunrise Gathering from the Rock, Alcatraz Island in San Francisco, recorded on Thanksgiving morning. At 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, color experts Joanne and Arielle Ekstut talk about their new book, The Secret Language of Color. And we will be giving away a copy of that book. At 11:30 on Words and Pictures, underground cartoon writer Dennis Eichhorn tells the wild stories that have inspired books such as The Legend of Wild Man Fisher and the newly published Dennis P. Eichhorn's Real Good Stuff. He is joined in the studio by his collaborating artists Pat Moriarty and J.R. Williams. But first, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Thank you for listening to KBOO Radio, and thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO is proud to present one of the greatest jazz films ever made, Round Midnight. Join us Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for this 1986 American-French film that captured the Paris jazz scene of the 1950s. Watch jazz legend Dexter Gordon deliver an Oscar-nominated performance. Round Midnight, the Clinton Street Theater, Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 2522 Southeast Clinton.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, December 12th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM and KBOO.fm on the web. A few headlines before we get rolling, but later in the program we're going to be speaking with Chase Murdoch. Listeners may remember him from the book, The Passion of Bradley Manning. Now, of course, Chelsea Manning, there's another edition of the book out, I believe. But today we're going to be talking with Chase about the main prerequisite.